What is phase two?
New day is dawning. The day of the
Power Cosmic Podcast.
Gathered from around the galaxy comes the world's greatest comic book fans, all in one terrific podcast. It's the
Power Cosmic Podcast.
With your host with the most, the man who puts on Terrific Con, the world's greatest Comic Con every August at the Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut, Mitch Halleck. Joining Mitch each week will be an assembly of his terrific super friends. Join them as they talk about comic books, movies, and more. It's the Power Cosmic Podcast.
Power Cosmic Podcast.
Hey, podcast listeners, this is your old pal, Mitch Halleck. And you are listening to a very special episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast. Why is it so special? Well, in this particular episode, I'm going to look back at 40 years of Superman the movie, and I'm joined by my friend and frequent Terrific Con guest, the one and only writer and artist, Jerry Ordway, who, when you're listening to this on November 28th, will be celebrating his birthday. So, what better way to celebrate the man who drew Superman and so many other iconic characters as we went to go see a special screening from Phantom Events of Superman, the movie, on the big screen. It was a great time. They had a little documentary in the beginning of it by Ralph Garman, frequent co-host with Kevin Smith on Hollywood Babylon. And they talked about the movie, some behind-the-scenes stuff, and then, if that wasn't good enough, there was a Fleischer cartoon, The Mechanical Monsters, which was on the big screen, just like the old days. We saw the animated Superman from the early 40s, which was voiced by the radio actor, Mr. Bud Collier, who, bizarrely enough, I worked with his granddaughter, Reed Collier, for many years in Norwalk, Connecticut, and she would always say my grandfather was on the radio, and at the time there was no Google to go look it up, so I didn't know what she was talking about. And then years later I found out that her grandfather was indeed the very first Superman on the radio and the voice in the cartoons. So what you're going to hear, and bear with it, it's a very long episode, is our 25-minute ride first to the movie theater, where we start talking about where we were 40 years ago when we first saw the movie, and then we're going to go to the movie and then listen to a very long hour and 20-minute discussion on Superman the movie, the character of Superman, the character of superheroes, and what works and what doesn't work anymore, and a whole lot of Superman talk. So again, this is Mitch Halleck. You're listening to a very special episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast with Jerry Ordway. And make sure you check out Jerry's new work at DC Comics and their Christmas special, the Nuclear Winter special, where he and Paul Dini of the Batman animated fame work on a Firestorm story. And make sure you check out Jerry's new comic book, DC Primal, which will be spotlighting a new line of toys from Funko. It's kind of like a mashup of DC characters met the He-Man toys in the 80s. And Jerry's doing some work for them. So those books will be out pretty soon. So be on the lookout for those. Again, sit back and listen to two Superman fans go to the movies and talk about the one and only Man of Steel.
All right, where can I put it? I'll put it right there. All right, it's, let's say, November 27th?
26th, you're right.
Yeah, well, it's your birthday tomorrow, so don't you know?
I'm trying to
this is what happens. You start to forget. Anyway, this is Mitch Halleck on the Power Cosmic Podcast with Jerry Ordway, writer-artist from Superman, Shazam, and all parts in between, going off to go see the 40th anniversary screening of Superman the movie. Now, I remember when I saw it, it actually came out right about this time, but where were you 40 years ago when Superman the movie came out? I know, isn't that scary? Yeah. 40 years ago?
Well, I was working in commercial art
in
at a studio
Midwest?
In Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, yeah.
And I remember seeing it. It was definitely a December release.
Yeah, it was at Christmas time because I remember the ad saying this Christmas. You believe a man could fly.
There was a lot of build-up, and everybody really was excited about it.
Yep.
Because it was a big-budget superhero movie. There was nothing done like that.
No, prior to that, I can't think of a big superhero movie. Other than Doc Savage, which was... No, that... Forgettable. That was before that.
Yeah, yeah.
That was like 75.
Yeah, it didn't... But this was like a big deal. You
know, the only other big superhero movie ever was Batman, really, with Adam West, right?
Well, that was even not a big...
That was a TV show movie.
But the movie, right, the movie came out after the first season.
So this was really the very first superhero, big budget Hollywood movie. There'd never been something. Yeah, you're going to get on 95 Milford.
Yeah, no, it was a big movie. And, you know, all the casting with big stars and everything else. And there was definitely a big buildup. I remember the ad in the newspaper.
Yep, yep.
Which ran in black and white, which was
just the Superman crest.
It was the clouds.
The clouds.
Yeah. And I think that was one of Bob Peake had done bunch of different ones. So that was.
Now, there's no internet back then, so how did you find out about it?
Well, you read. I mean, there was stuff in the
newspaper. Yeah.
And there was, you know, they did a lot of promotion on TV and stuff, so you'd see ads.
Did you know anybody in the movie besides Marlon Brando and Gene Hackman?
Oh, yeah. No, I knew that.
You knew Margot Kidder?
Yeah, because I remember her from a couple of things. I think she was in Rockford Files and things like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But I remember when, back then, you would see a trailer. That was really the teaser trailer.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing this trailer for, it was actually Eric Roberts in King of the Gypsies. But I didn't know that because the trailer just showed the silhouetted character, and I remember sitting in the theater.
I never saw the trailer. Now I think about it, I never saw a trailer for Superman.
Well, I remember sitting there thinking, "Oh, this is going to be a Superman trailer because there's a silhouetted character against the sky or whatever."
And it was Eric Roberts.
And then
Roberts.
It was a different movie, and I was like so disappointed.
No, I'll have to go look on the internet. I don't remember seeing a trailer for Superman.
Yeah, I think it's probably on the DVD release. One of those.
All right. Because that was a busy summer. Because I remember. This is 78.
Yeah.
So Star Wars was 77.
Right.
78, you had Close Encounters had come out in Christmas time, too.
Right.
That was another big movie.
Close
Encounters was 78. Yeah. Star Wars was 77.
Yeah.
Close Encounters was 78. I can't think of what the other big movie was that year, really.
Well, it was, when was Rocky?
It was Rocky 2 came out. Rocky came out in 76.
Oh, okay.
Because I remember seeing it in came out in 76. So, yeah, this was it. And it came out at Christmas time.
Well, it was, again, though, it wasn't like now where there's 8,000 movies.
They would save. Movies would play for like a year.
Right.
Remember they'd come out.
Right, there was expensive movies.
Yeah.
Those were the ones that, you know, you would just basically wait for.
Did you go see in the big giant screen? They were all big screens back then.
Yeah, well, we had a... I remember the one theater was the Southgate Theater. Had the curved...
That panoramic.
It was Cinerama or something.
Cinescope.
It created like a big curved widescreen.
Yep.
And it was a big theater, so I remember seeing it there, at least after... I'm not sure the first time
I saw it. Were those the things I remember seeing Empire Strikes Back? Like, if you sat on the side, the movie would be a little curved. Like,
yeah.
I remember the letters coming up in Star Wars was off on an angle.
It was a slight curve. It wasn't, like, too extreme, but the movie theater was really big.
Yeah.
So, unless you were in the front row, you weren't going to get a bad seat.
No. We're talking, like, used to sit, like, 900 people. Remember that?
Yeah,
like,
no,
big 1,000 seats.
It was definitely, like, that's what they carved up to make multiplex.
I know.
I mean, Southgate at that time was the one screen, and that existed up until I think maybe the 80s.
So did you go right when it opened? During premiere?
Yeah, I think Mike Macklin and I went immediately.
Yeah.
Whatever the first day, and you know it was really thrilling. So even though you had problems with it, you know, it didn't ruin the whole experience. It wasn't like, oh, damn, I wish they wouldn't have done the turning the time back or whatever.
No, I didn't get into that stuff. I just remember the big, maybe because it was a big screen thing. I remember, like, the shots of Kansas with the wheat fields in Smallville, and then everything looked gigantic.
And
that's
the music was such a big part of it.
The music was very Star Wars-y.
I mean, from the middle, you know, when the credits first started rolling.
Yep.
You know, the
and the John letters Williams flying at you.
You know, all that was just like the hair on your neck would stand up. You know, like, holy crap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember Krypton looking so small, though. That was like, why is there nobody living on that planet?
Right.
You know?
Right. They They're all in that population dome. Problem.
No, no. I was like,
and it was cold.
They all live in these, like, caves and stuff. I'm
it
like,
it was an ice world. It was cold.
It was an ice world.
People died of frostbite. No, I think,
but no, you grew up with the Superman TV show, though, right?
I remember it as a kid. It was in reruns. I was not a big...
I used to watch it, but I didn't care less. No, so I was more into Batman or Spider-Man.
I respected what was done in those books, but I was a hardcore Marvel maniac.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that actually turned me... That movie did really turn me around a little bit. And I think that's the first time I remember noticing Jose Luis Garcia Lopez had done some Superman work, you know, in and around the movie, and he actually captured that feel of the Christopher Reeve, you know,
the look.
I mean, I think he did a good job of kind of.
Well, I remember those stories at the time in DC Comics. They weren't really the best of the Superman books, I'd say, because I remember getting books where there was a guy falling out a window. Right. Remember that? He's like, now you'll have to show people you're Superman, or I'm going to die. I'm like, wow, this guy's saying a lot as he's plummeting to the ground. And right in front of him, he waited right by the window where Perry White was and Superman to yell out this manifesto threat as he's plummeting to the earth. And then there was like Superman fighting like a gunslinger. And
there
weren't Terra epic Man. Stories. Is that who that was?
He
was like a space cowboy.
Space McCloud.
Yeah. So I would read those, but they weren't really like very heroic. No. They were very bizarre stories, you know. A lot of like, remember one with Lois Lane and she was chained to like a lamppost and the world was destroyed. And it said something like Lois Lane human bomb or something like that. She like wiped out the world and he was always yelling. Like Superman was always like a frantic look on his face. Like, I can't go near you or the world will be destroyed. It was always cataclysmic events going on.
If you were a Superman fan and you read those books,
yeah,
there were clearly good stories in and among.
Who's writing those at that time? Is that
Harry Bates?
Harry Bates
in the '70s.
Is that Elliot S. Magan?
Elliot Magan, probably a little bit. I don't remember if Elliot and Carey both wrote.
I remember Carey more of a Flash guy.
Well, no, that was a little later. He got moved over to Flash after the Superman stuff. But
and Kurt Swan was drawing some of them, and Al Plastino was still drawing some of them.
Kurt Schaffenberger was still doing stuff. It was just, I mean,
they didn't seem fun, though.
They were my parents' comics.
My
parents didn't read comics. They were that type of thing. It was, you know, that was a big problem.
So why pick Superman, though? If you're Warner Brothers, is that when Warner Brothers just bought DC at that time?
No, and it was the Salkinds. They saw Superman as that was one of the most recognizable characters.
Yeah.
That's their big thing was that if you asked anybody who Superman
everybody,
was,
yeah,
everybody
that's
knew.
True with the S. Yeah,
and I would also guess, and I could be wrong,
what?
But it's possible Batman that the rights were tied up because I know.
Oh, really?
Been,
oh, they might have been with Fox.
There
the
had been
TV
attempts.
Show.
Well, yeah. I think there had been like attempts with the movie stuff too. I don't know that any of them came to fruition, but anyways, it was
a strange choice, I guess.
Salkinds did it mostly because it was the most recognized name. They knew that, you know, worldwide, that would get people into movie theaters if they did.
And there was a bunch of people they wanted to. They wanted Robert Redford, Paul Newman, Stallone. Those were all thrown around. Well, then they got Christopher Reeve.
You know, they got Marlon Brando was like the biggest star at the time. And I don't know.
The Godfather.
Physically.
No.
And Gene Hackman was the.
Oh, he was
another
huge.
Box office star. So, I mean, they got. You know, they top loaded it with recognizable names. Glenn Ford.
Was in it, yeah. Jackie Cooper was kind of somebody.
Yeah. I mean, it was really loaded with names, so they could use a newcomer. You know, use build a movie around everybody.
So I asked you the other day because somebody posted it on Facebook. You don't know who did the artwork for the original comic, but when it opens up with the kid turning the pages and saying, you know, a long time ago, once upon a time.
It was a cool opening, but
I
don't know if anybody's ever come forward.
That would be a cool prop, somebody said, if you found it and owned it.
Well, I wonder, I mean, again, I think, I know that I read somewhere, or my memory tells me, could be wrong. but I think Mike Plouc did storyboards for...
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I'm not sure if it was Superman 1 or 2.
Well, all you really see is the Daily Planet building and the spaceship on the cover flying out from Krypton.
Yeah.
And that's it. You don't really see any characters.
It was... The production was done at Pinewood.
In England, yeah.
So it's possible they hired somebody at production. It could have been a production artist. You know, who knows?
I do remember New York.
When they filmed in the summer. They filmed during the summer of the blackout.
Yeah, in 77. Yeah. Well, which is weird is some of the sets, like Lex Luthor's place, obviously is set in England. And then they would film in New Haven. They filmed in New York in some of the subway in Grand Central.
Right.
Because you could see it in New Haven's own.
Right.
Not New Haven, Bridgeport, Connecticut's Ray Hassett, who's Harry the Hat.
Oh, right.
Who was a New Haven cop that I met years later. He gets run over by the train, and it's a New Haven train that Lex Luthor pushes him out. Line, pushed him out and killed him. So I was that was kind of ironic that.
Well, and they used the Daily News.
The Daily News building was the Daily Planet. And the World Trade Center's in the background, too. The old World Trade Center, he goes flying. Yeah. And remember the Enron? Remember that company?
Oh, yeah.
When he catches the cat burglar?
Oh, right.
And Officer Mooney, and he blows him down. You can see the big E in the background. Right. I remember that. That was that building that was kind of curved.
Oh, yeah.
On the bottom? Yeah. So there's a lot of landmarks in it, too.
Well, and again, when I remember seeing the thing in the theater, that whole...
Yeah.
His first night out.
Yeah, kind of that was the best part, I thought.
Well, there was... I really liked the whole movie, but I mean, that was definitely a standout. Like, there were the little bits, like even the, you know, the police cars and the chase with the cops and the...
Some of those I don't remember being part of the original movie because it's been redone so many times with extra footage. Yeah. I was like, was that all in the first showing?
Well, the thing that didn't make it...
The chase?
The chase was, but I think...
There was a boat chase too, right?
The scene where the boat is in the middle in front of the police station, that was cut.
Yeah, because I don't remember that in the theaters.
I don't think that was in there, but I mean, who knows? It's
been so long. Yeah. You're gonna keep going on 95 North. Like a lot of the scenes where the hijacking of the missiles with Hackman and Ned Beatty.
And then it had Larry Hagman as the...
Larry Hagman as the chief. But I don't remember that being very elaborate in the theaters. And then when it came to TV, there's like whole 10 minutes, you know, bits where they're like, dress as a country guy. Yeah.
Well, they added... There's also multiple versions because they did like a Richard Donner.
Yeah.
They did like an extended, or they added in some scenes back one point. But then they also just recently did the ABC...
TV
ran in a 3-hour.
Because you tell me the reason why they did that is because when they would sell movies to TV, they'd sell them by the minute, so they'd add extra footage so they'd get a bigger paycheck or something from the movie rights.
I think they did. They always, you know, especially in stuff like that, they
had extra
footage to use.
Well, wasn't they at Hackman for only like 15 days or something like that, so they filmed as much as they could? There was some crazy thing.
No, they filmed Hackman. Well, I mean, they filmed them for both movies.
Oh, Superman 1 and 2.
It was originally supposed to be filmed simultaneously.
Yeah.
And they did film, like, a portion of the second one, but then they had, I guess, you know, they were just falling behind, and it was like, hey, we got to concentrate on the first one.
Well, yeah, because wasn't that the whole idea that it was going to come out in one summer and then a couple...
Summer. It was going to... Christmas and then summer or something.
Yeah.
It was going to end with a cliffhanger originally.
Right.
And then they rethought that, and that's when Richard Donner got fired, and, you know, after the thing's a big hit, it's like, okay, you're gone.
And then they bring in Richard Lester, right?
Right.
And then
Gene Hackman
refused to come back,
so there's a lot of scenes of, like, a stand-in from the back.
Yeah. I always thought his voice sounded weird sometimes because it's not him.
They had another actor who, I can't remember who he is.
What sounded like
him? He was on the paper chase at the time. Is it
Ryan O'Neill?
No. The TV show was the paper chase. Was the
Oh, yeah.
But there was this kind of burly guy who's actually had a long career.
John Houseman?
No. He was a younger guy at the time, but he dubbed Gene Hackman's a few lines.
Oh, I didn't know that.
In Superman 2. It was Peter something, I think his name. I don't remember the last name.
The main guy from the paper chase with the glasses?
No. There was like one of his... Man, this is
I just remember.
This is what your podcast...
No, it's just arguing. No, people will be like right now, no, this is so-and-so. They know all this
it
stuff.
Was
anyway.
This guy with curly hair.
Anyway.
But he was...
All right. But the effects were fine at the time. when it was flying?
Yeah.
You were like, oh, look, it's green screen. I can see it's fun. It's funny.
Because they used to have to shoot, right? It wasn't like now where you actually do use green screen.
No, back then it was like screen. You would see
Superman's
that little...
Superman's costume was blue, so they had to make everything a little green on his costume so it wouldn't drop
out.
Right. Yeah, it was blue screen back then.
Now, the one thing I couldn't stand, I remember on the radio they would play the Lois Lane song.
Oh, right.
And I couldn't stand that dialogue. I would cringe. Once you start doing that, can you read my mind? You could fly up in the sky. I was like, who's writing this? A 4-year-old poetry? Well, what is going on here?
That wasn't even in the... I mean, it wasn't...
That wasn't in the original movie, but it was on the radio, though.
Yeah, well, it was written by Anthony Newley and Leslie...
Oh, yeah. I remember Anthony Newley.
And they were, you know, big-time songs.
Yeah, they were, yeah.
But they made some decision not to run it at the end credits or something. But it was actually a hit.
Yeah.
And it's good with... I mean, I think it works with Margot Kidder basically narrating it or speaking it almost like a poetry or something.
Now, you know, when I saw this, too, there's a lot of scenes in here that play in the 70s that they wouldn't pull off today without getting some protest from somebody. Do you remember the scene where he's out the first night and he saves the cat in the tree?
Oh, right.
And he brings the girl the kitty... And he goes, oh, here you go. And she, Mom, Amanda saved the cat by flying down from the sky. Haven't I just stopped lying? And she slaps her.
Now, well, you hear it.
No, you hear it, but it was funny back then. But now it'd be like, oh, my God, child abuse. What are you doing? So they left that in.
And that was Jimmy Carter was still president.
And then remember the scene with the airplane when they were flying?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Jimmy Carter was president. I remember they did an actual screening for the White House.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and that was kind of funny because there's this, you know, he saves Air Force One.
Yeah.
And the pilots with a little comedy like, hey, we get our engine back? And it's like, no, just fly.
Yeah. But did you, so you weren't at D.C. yet, but years later, did they have like a big screening? Did you ever hear if they had a premiere for the folks at D.C. Comics, or they really do it?
You know what? They would get like us, they would be included in the press screening.
Oh, okay.
So I remember when Superman 2 came out.
That was 81.
I got... like a ticket. I was working for them at the time. I got like a little, you know, movie ticket that I could see it in Chicago if I wanted to drive.
I just didn't want
to go. But they were doing them. They used to do them just as a like press, and it was like a, you know, for the reviewers or for radio station giveaways.
It was always like a sneak press screening. Yeah. They didn't do any.
It wasn't a fancy thing.
There wasn't a tie-in from DC like an adaptation of this movie, was there?
No, but they did those tabloid.
The Treasury
Edition? Treasury Edition, yeah.
Well, I saw one that said Superman the movie, and it had him pointing up at the sky. Right, I just saw that at a store.
Yeah, yeah.
What's in that? Just the making of it?
Yeah, there's a lot of pictures of, you know, production.
Sets.
And there's some drawings of the costumes and things like that.
Now, did you ever notice that when the three criminals, Zod and Ursa and Nan, fly off to the Phantom Zone, it kind of looked like an ABBA album cover?
That's funny.
And when they were just flying, like, why did they just become a Swedish band? I don't understand that. They just went off into nowhere. That's the story I had heard, that they plan on doing part one and part two, and when he throws the nuclear missile up in the sky, at the end, somehow towards the sun, it blew up, and that's what triggered the Phantom Zone.
Right.
And they land at the very end, and then they cut and would say, tune in next summer for Superman 2.
Right.
So that was the plan. All right. I do remember.
Yeah, cliffhanger. I think he was supposed to... Initially, they still had the turning back time.
Yep.
But it was going to basically help them defeat the Kryptonians or something. I don't know.
I don't want to get into that turning back time because it gives me a headache. Because I've told you this before.
I just always think of the Cher song.
If I could turn back time. Yeah, that's going to be a ratings getter. All I know is he stops the dam from exploding,
right,
the water.
It doesn't make sense.
He floods in the village, and oh, look, we have water now because they had a drought. That never made sense. I'm like, why don't they just move up the river? Because, you know, it's right there. There's a big thing of water. Remember the Golden Gate's falling apart? He saves that.
Right.
So when he goes back in time, he stops that missile from ever hitting the ground and blowing up by saving Lois Lane,
I don't know how this actually works. I don't think they could show that and make it work.
It always gave me a headache. I'm like, so is he in two places at one time?
Right, there were still two missiles.
There was two missiles.
And if he went back in time, is he still going to be in chains and he's still going to have to be freed up by Miss Teschmacher? You never, I don't know.
Speaking of Miss Tessmacher, she was up. She was something else, as they would say. Valley of Perrine in the day. Now, what was she famous for, other than her attributes?
Well, she was in a lot of movies.
She was in movies back then?
Yeah, lots of movies.
I didn't know that.
She was in the Bob Fosse movie. She played not the Bob Fosse.
So she was like an entertainer?
She was in the Lenny Bruce movie.
With Dustin Hoffman, yeah.
She played the wife. She was in...
Oh, she was an actress at the time.
I don't remember
seeing her in anything else, though.
She was in a lot
of
stuff.
I know she's still with us, but she's not doing well. She's got, like, back problems. I have back problems, but not like Valerie Perrine has. But anyway, she was back for Superman 2. Were those scenes filmed during the making of Superman 1? They didn't get her back either. Miss Tessmacher.
Were there scenes of her by herself? I don't even remember, because I
don't know. Ned Beatty was just... Yeah, the next one. It's all confusing.
Like I said, whatever was
He was
filmed.
Kind of a big star, too, at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Deliverance and
Network.
Whatever else.
He was in
Network, yeah.
He was the Network executive.
How much did this cost to them to make? $40 million, didn't it?
It was big at the time.
It was a big budget, yeah. But it made a lot back.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's... Each of these things nowadays, I heard read something like, where movies are costing $300 million, and I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah.
But... You know, back then it was all physical.
Oh yeah, they had to make all those sets and stuff.
Or camera effects or whatever. They were, you know,
models.
The compositing was really tricky. It wasn't like if they had to animate something, they had to animate it by frame, rotoscope. All that stuff was laborious.
There's a lot of cars there. Uh oh! I hope we're not going to find out that we can't get in. Because it's a Tuesday, we figure there's nobody there.
But it's bargain day.
Yeah,
I don't know if it is. I didn't see that on their website.
You know what's killing me about this? This is only being shown for like 3 days. It was on Sunday,
and then next week.
Today, and then next week, and that's
Sunday?
It. Yeah. I was like, you're not going to show this anymore?
Well, that's more than they usually get out of the Fathom ones. They usually do 2 days.
I would have done it. I think they would have made some more.
Sunday and a Tuesday, or a Sunday and a Wednesday.
I remember there was a contest in the comics. To be in the Superman movie, you had to like spell out the word Superman. You had to cut out like little letters from each DC comic.
Imagine all those books that you wind up buying on eBay with those letters cut out.
Well, that's I just read an article in Back Issue Magazine. They had a special issue, and they talked to the two kids that did it. They flew them up to Canada. So that, you know, when he's in the high school,
right.
When he's still Clark, and he kicks over the thing. If you look in the background, there's these two guys in gray sweatshirts. These are the kids that won the contest. That got to be on the set. They never met Christopher Reeve there because it was really that other guy.
Jeff East, right?
Jeff East, yeah. Right, so we're about to go into the theater. You know, there's a Fleischer cartoon before this one.
Because it says 2.5 hours.
I wonder which one they picked.
It was supposed to be Superman and the Mechanical Monster.
All right. It's not going to be the Japatorps.
At least that's what
I'm pretty sure it's not going to be that one.
Yeah.
That would not go over well. Which is kind of cool.
Don't these people know we're going to a
movie? I know. You would think, don't you know? Hello, we're trying to see Superman. All right. Well, we're going to pick this up when we get back from the theater. We have 24 minutes of us singing Cher songs in the car. And believe it or not, this will probably be one of the highest rated shows ever. I'll sell it as Jerry Ordway talks Superman the movie. And people will be like, when is he going to talk about the movie? Now we're talking about how we're stuck under a light. And we're on gas fumes.
I was looking for gas stations.
So. There's one right up the street. I used to live here, you know.
So we have to go around? Oh.
Yeah.
Big loop.
I was working here in Brantford, and the last time I was at this theater, I snuck out during lunch hour and took the guy that was in charge of the software development, and we went to go see Star Trek Nemesis, one of the worst Star Trek movies ever made.
I never saw it.
You didn't miss anything. That's what Tom Hardy.
Oh, is this the one with
played a clone of Picard?
Was it the last of those?
Yeah, it was the last Star Trek Next Generation movie. But so much for that job. That's how much I cared about working at Westbrook Technologies in Brantford, Connecticut.
Are you still recording?
Yeah, that I was leaving on my lunch hour because I hated the boss, Sean Donegan. Oh, I hated that guy. Oh, I would just... Hey, Sean. He lives out in Ohio, birthplace of Jerry Siegel. And I would go on my lunch hour to the movie theater and say, someday I'll be watching movies while you are long since gone. Anyway, we're going to see the movie. We'll talk back later. Bye. You know that Jerry Seinfeld thing? Was it Comedians and Coffee?
Oh, driving. We'll do, yeah, yeah.
We'll do books and beer. We'll just do sitting around talking about the, our geeks and stuff. So anyway, we just saw Superman, the 40th anniversary. Yep. Now we'll be serious. I won't be screaming about what they call it. And I got to tell you, it goes by a lot faster now. Maybe because I've seen it so many times and you're just waiting for the scenes to happen.
Yeah, you know what's going to happen. It's not like it's a
But I mean, it's still 2 hours and something minutes, but I was like, oh, wow, we're already at this point?
Yeah. Well, once it hits, once he goes to see Lex Luthor, it's all, you know, it moves really fast.
But now, here, getting all philosophical about it. Why did that movie work so well in 1978? And I got a theory why it works, and it's kind of like, you know how they say timeless? Mm-hmm. Certain things are like stuck there. It's definitely retro.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know if it's retro if you remember all that stuff, because I remember everything looking that way, so I don't know if that's like nostalgic or
that's nostalgia, know. Yeah.
But I could close my eyes and remember walking down the street in New York and it looked like that.
But
like,
you heard this is what Richard Donner always talked about, verisimilitude.
Yeah, the believability, like that world real
and
exists.
Yet, I mean, it's a mix of stuff. It's got 40s and 50s kind of feel to it, even though it was done in the 70s.
You think so?
Well, the Smallville and even the Manhattan stuff with Clark, and it's almost out of 1940s.
You're talking about
movie.
The way he acts.
Well, the costumes, the look of it, they're both dressed like he and Lois's costumes are very 50s.
That yellow outfit was weird.
But Clark with the fedora and the top
People
coat.
People were still
and
wearing
that,
some hats, maybe.
But I'm just saying that it has, even at that time, when I saw it, it felt like almost, that's a good, it's a good way,
it's a good blending.
It's a blending of different eras, but the feel of it is kind of an odd-gy, post-war kind of happy, everybody's friendly.
And here's what I was going to say to you, because I'm sitting here today.
It's a crash of those things.
I just caught it tonight, because I'm trying to do the timeline. He's there in the 50s. I would say Superman lands around 1952. That's what I'm thinking. Because he said at one point, he goes, oh, he left Addis Ababa.
Well, the meteor crashed in like 1948.
He said it would take him 3 years.
It would take 3 years
to get to Earth. So it's 1951.
Right.
So Clark is a little baby, about like three or four, maybe. 3 years when he's in that capsule.
When he comes out.
When he comes out.
Still a toddler, but I would say, maybe.
So Clark's in high school. 61, maybe?
So it's because
they're still playing Bill Haley on the radio.
But it's in the middle.
It's
Midwest,
in the Middle West,
the country,
so everything's a little,
right? So it's maybe
back
right,
a bit.
Right.
So then he goes off for, this is where the time
12
gap
years
happens.
in the Fortress of Solitude.
So he comes out when he's 30.
Theoretically.
Because he's 18.
Yeah.
He just graduated
right.
school, so
yeah,
he's 30.
Yeah.
And that's around 1977 or 78.
Right.
So do 30 years from that, 1948. Right. Yeah, it all
right.
fits timeline.
Except
right?
For what? Jor-El mentioning
that he was that in the thing for 12 years when they're in the capsule.
But he says, I will have been dead for many thousands of your years.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, there's
so
a lot of weird
stuff.
I know.
You don't get hung up on those things.
You don't. That's just the nowadays, the cynical, like the 26 known galaxies. I go, what are you talking about?
Right.
But I go, back in 1977, they didn't have all the NASA stuff. So there really wasn't that many. There's
and
an Andromeda galaxy. I know. There's always that part of it. But here's the problem. It's not a problem. What is, and I'm trying to put it in there, when he's leaving Kansas, Smallville.
Right.
His mother says, remember, right. always remember.
Always remember. I thought she said remember us.
I never really noticed it until today. Until I said, what is she saying, remember? Remember what? His upbringing?
I thought she was saying remember us. Yeah, basically, you're going off to a new part of your life.
He's not
going to
see him
forget where you came from.
12 years.
But I'm saying he doesn't know that.
No, I know that,
but
she's like, this is the last time I'll ever see you.
Right. So just don't forget where you came from.
See, and I'm trying to be nice, but the cynical side of me is like, well, who took care of the mom for 12 years? But Ben Hubbard.
Ben Hubbard, right.
Yeah, I hope he has some extra money for Ben Hubbard. But no, so what is she telling Clark to remember?
To remember his upbringing and remember them.
Who he is.
But to remember who he is with them. That's what I always felt. Like when I
No. And I'm going to say, this is what ties into why I think Superman works if it's done right, because some people don't get that.
Right.
Superman is the power of the gods. He's God.
Right.
But he restrains himself constantly.
Right.
And you can see in the scene, too, when he's flying with Lois.
Right.
She puts her hand out. He's holding her with his thumb and his pinky, whatever. Yeah, they say that. That, to me, is like, you know how much power that guy has? And all he's doing is holding her with literally a pinch.
Right.
And that amazes me, because I'm like, he's so strong. He His whole life everything. Would
be about restraint.
That's all Superman is. Right. It's his constant, like...
And he was obviously raised by them kill to everybody. Not stand out so that nobody would notice him. So he was perfect at being invisible, which they show when he's on the... You know, like when he's leaving and he's trying to get on the elevator and...
Oh, when he's bumbling. Oh, he's
says
like,
hi to the guys and like, they ignore him. Up,
I'm going this way.
He's
yeah.
like... His identity is a perfect disguise to be an invisible guy, somebody you just wouldn't notice. Or so if you noticed him, you'd dismiss him.
But to make a good Superman comic book, and based on, if you just use this movie as a template, if, as long as you remember that,
but
Clark you're good storytelling.
But Clark can't continue to be that. In other words, like in a comic, month after month, the reader remembers. You can't. You basically wear out Lois trying to figure out who his identity is.
Well, maybe it's because you're not supposed to have a reader. Maybe you're not supposed to have a reader forever.
Well, that's the theory.
Because that's what I was thinking too. Why don't you just recycle the storylines?
That was their theory in the old days. Was that the readership turned over the Stan Lee thing? Like five, 6 years.
Every comic, somebody's first.
Marvel used to say 7 years, and that was at a certain point in the when I was working for them in the 80s. It was that they would. Refresh the origins of heroes like every 7 years.
Yeah.
To update them maybe 7 years so that it was always happening 7 years in the past. So nobody was around for 30 years.
Yeah, there wasn't World War II guys and the Korean War.
Fantastic Four was always around for 7 years and Spider-Man is for 7 years. So whatever that point of time, 1985 minus 7 years.
But I'm saying, is that what happened with Superman in the big picture of why it just kind of fell out of favor? Because we got to admit, he's not the most popular character anymore in the world.
And at the time, I mean, what was cool about the movie, he was gosh, wow, he used swell.
Which, by the way, I have no problem with those words because I use them around the house. And I'm like, geez, I'm a dork. Oh, no, they brought him back?
Yeah, at the time
I always said
kind of
like,
but at the time it was kind of corny.
In the 70s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they definitely brought that kind of quaint, you know.
Oh, shucks attitude. Yeah.
But that's all like Jimmy Stewart, old Jimmy Stewart movies.
But this is why this doesn't work now. Because I was thinking about, everybody wants to be Batman. When I go to put this show out and I go to do Terrificon stuff, I go, what do you guys want to see? And I told you when I go to the bookstore, Batman's got four shelves. Right. Everybody wants to be Batman.
Right.
But in the real world, in the comic book world, Superman's the guy you really want to be.
Right.
But you can't, obviously, because you don't have that power.
Batman you could maybe be. Superman, you're not going
to
be.
You're never going to be. That's the one you should aspire to. But everybody wants to be Batman. I'm like, Batman's a jerk in a way.
Yeah. But the audience, in comics, Batman's always been from the time they turn him into the serious Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight in the 80s,
Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams kind of gave him that.
Oh, you're talking that far back? I thought you meant the Frank Miller.
No, when Denny O'Neill and they brought the.
Yeah.
They really did bring the Dark Knight back, you know. But at that point, he became. A kind of darker. The Joker became kind of darker,
murdering people, and
so I mean, Superman's never been that, and it never should.
You guys
be
try to make it dark,
but you can't make him dark.
No,
and the problem is, it's like we had this when
Byrne did
book.
The death thing.
But I mean, if you did turn him, because that was the first story anybody would pitch to Carlin was that's Superman goes bad. It's like, well, you can't come back from that if you're keeping continuity. If you're not in continuity, then you can do it. But if you keep in continuity, within that continuity, if he ever does something bad, he's already on the wire. People, he's so powerful,
he's
you should
up.
Be afraid of him. And that's why he's so open, and that's why he so projects that goodness, so that people aren't afraid of him, because he is so powerful.
Yeah, right.
He
could
take over
the world. Oh, he could look at you and burn you to a crisp.
So that's the point. The point was, he could take over the world. He can't be threatening as a character.
Right.
He has to act non-threatening. I mean, it's innate within him to be a good guy.
But in the movie, I'm not saying the movies, but they show him being such a good Boy Scout and stuff. Remember they played it in the third movie? They did the dark side.
Right.
It's always there.
Right.
But why do you always have to go that way?
Why do
writers always go, oh, I'm going to make Superman a bad guy? Why?
Because
they get pissed. They're frustrated.
It's an easy story.
It is an easy story. It's harder to tell.
it's harder to make him interesting if he's a good guy. What we did when we were doing Superman was we surrounded him with a cast of characters that could reflect all those other things without having him to do that.
Right.
But we also did that story where he basically became another character.
You're talking about when he goes off into the exile
after
stuff?
After he executes the Kryptonians.
Yeah, he goes off into space.
He starts, but there's that storyline we did that built to that, where he basically starts his mind.
What, the Kirak one?
No, before this. After Byrne left, we did this story. It was called Identity Crisis.
Is that with the Guardian and all that stuff?
He basically impersonates Gangbuster.
Yeah, Gangbuster. That was right. It was like almost an amnesia. Right. He had I remember the story.
So he impersonates Gangbuster. Yeah, and then he realizes, wait, I'm the bad guy here. And that's when he goes and exiles himself.
He gets that vigilante.
He feels
mode.
Like he can't trust himself. And that was a well-regarded story. I'm glad it finally got printed.
Oh, it was good. No, I remember those stories. I haven't read them in 30 years.
That one had never been reprinted until this last year. Until
you just gave me the exile book. By the way, looking for a Christmas present, Exile is available right now on Amazon.com. I think it's on sale right now, too. I've seen it go down to like $75.
That's good. Yeah. That's a good
story. By Jerry Ordway, by the way. And who else? Grummet's on that?
No, that's before
Dan. You, Gamble?
That's before Dan. Although, in the beginning.
No, who's
Dan,
on that?
It was Roger Stern, Cary Gamble.
Yeah.
Brett Breeding had joined
Breeding.
Somewhere in that point.
It's a good book. Yeah, it's really good.
It was me.
Does that lead into the Maximus stuff where he's fighting off world and the gladiator stories?
That's all that. When he goes into space, he winds up drifting
on
and
war
he gets
world.
Stuck on war world and he basically has to. His big moment.
Those are
where,
some of the best Superman stories.
But see, that was. He killed the Kryptonians.
Yeah.
And he had him go on his journey.
Yeah, his repentance, his purgatory.
When he's on war world is you're supposed to kill your opponent.
And he doesn't do it.
And he refuses to kill his opponent.
Right.
And that's when he basically realizes that he's healed.
Yeah.
And he can go back to Earth.
So, but going back to the movie now, and this is why I sit there, I go, I actually think it's harder to write Superman, and most people do the cop-out stuff. They go, oh, well, he's going to go do this now, he's going to do that now, and I'm like, you guys suck. You really do, because I go, you look at this movie, and here's the thing, too. The world has changed so much.
Right.
It was really a shithole back then in 1977.
New York was terrible.
Oh, it was horrible.
Yeah, it was
my dad would drive... You wouldn't go to Times Square. You would roll up the windows and drive as fast as you can because you'd get shot. It was bad. And it was depressed. They ran out of money. I don't know if you were here back then with it.
No. Well, I visited. I was
Mayor
in New
Beam,
York.
They told me, he asked the government,
well,
Ford,
they went for, right, they were
told him to drop dead. Remember that headline that we had? Ford tells New York, drop dead.
That summer they were filming was 77.
Was when the blackout happened in July.
I was in New York. I went up to D.C., I went up to Marvel trying to get work, and I got turned down.
Yeah.
So I knew what the city was scary looking.
Oh, it was
looking.
Sleazy as all hell.
It was scary.
Dirty and violent
and
stuff.
It was at that point where it was just really...
So as much as people cry about how bad the world is today, it was really depressed back then, too.
This is the lesson for any young person. As bad as you think it is...
It was always worse than
the
time.
At the time, we always felt it was bad. I mean, I remember growing up through, like, when... That the time of the movie, you had Jimmy Carter was president, and then Reagan.
We had oil,
we had gas shortages. But in the middle of between Carter and Reagan, we had the Iran hostage crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And we had the fall of the Shah of Iran.
Yeah, I remember all that. Yeah.
That was a scary time. And when Reagan came in,
had Russia about to blow us up,
right?
Too.
Well, we worried that Reagan was going to be the doddering old fool who was going to push the buttons.
No,
and
he was
start
a cowboy.
Nuclear war.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, each generation faces something like that, and surprisingly, we come out of it.
But I'm saying, now go back to Superman.
But you always need hope, and that's the point.
What I'm trying to say. I'm watching this movie today, and I go, I remember when this came out, the world wasn't a shining penny like everyone thinks it might be nostalgia-wise.
No.
But this, you went to this movie, and you felt good when it came out, and you said, geez, oh, shucks.
Right.
Why can't you aspire to be a nice guy?
It falls into the 70s were very narcissistic, dark movies. That's the beginning of R-rated
and
all
the anti-hero and the Vietnam War vet guy.
Star
comes
Wars,
back.
You had Rocky, and you had Superman. Those were three
the
within
biggest
the two
successful
years that turned the tide.
Yeah.
Also towards movies that had
heroic
that had an ending. because the 70s, there's a lot of movies that just...
Because well, they were artsy. They were very...
They felt like they just ran out of time.
Yeah. It's because like, they were trying to do anti-establishment. They were like the new generation. They weren't going to do the Orson Welles and Francis John Ford.
Right, and they weren't following the norms of what a screenplay was, where you had a beginning, middle, and end.
No, they were like, just out there.
Right.
And there's but you had some Francis Ford Coppola doing some stories.
Right, there's great movies in that, but it was a darker era.
You know which one is the epitome? You ever see The Conversation?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Gene Hackman? Yeah. Harrison Ford's in that, too. But anyway, and so is Cindy Williams, and is it Frederick Forrest? He's the guy he was dropping on. And Robert Duvall.
Right.
But that really doesn't have an ending either. It's a great movie to watch. It's a good character study, because his name is Harry Call, I believe Gene Hackman, is it?
Yeah,
and it just kind of ends, and he's like ripping apart his thing because Harrison Ford's calling him up saying, "You know, we're listening to you." And
well, you had Apocalypse Now in there too.
Apocalypse Now was 78.
You also had the other one I was thinking about, the classic with the movie that feels like it doesn't have an ending is French Connection, because basically,
oh, the guy gets away.
Yeah, the guy gets away, and it just ends.
Another Gene Hackman,
and they're
movie.
All standing there, and it was like very groundbreaking.
Well, that
at
was
the
based
time.
On a true story, though.
But I'm saying it was groundbreaking at the time. But Rocky...
It was?
Yeah, it was because...
I was only a kid. This is 72, 73.
Well, see, I'm older than you. I remember seeing these things like... I didn't see
that's
when
William
they first
Friedkin
came out.
Too.
Right.
Yeah.
I had to turn 18 to see an R-rated movie, or 17, basically.
Right.
So, I mean, that was, you know... but it was that era of film that was dark, and it was like kind of
unpredictable. Well, it had to happen, though.
People died, you know, like the main character could die.
No, but that had to happen, though, because you
lived in this, you evolved. You wouldn't realize you missed the other if you didn't have, you know. That's
you grew up with the studio system, all your big movies, and then in the 60s, all your rebellious teenagers and college guys are taking
Vietnam,
over the movie. Yeah.
You had protests.
Studios, the anti-establishment. Yeah.
Definitely.
But don't you see, though, the reason why Rocky becomes big and Star Wars becomes big and Superman becomes big is because people, as much as people wanted to express themselves, they still needed that hero.
But see, this is in the movie. This is my favorite line, and it's my favorite line
in Superman
is Jor-El. He says,
they could be a great
they
people.
They could be a great people if they want to.
Oh, I know. I thought
when I saw that, I remember thinking, "Yeah,
no, yeah, gets absolutely."
Me.
No,
it gets me.
This movie tonight, I'm sitting there watching it tonight, and I said, "I didn't remember the always remember who we are, whatever the line is." But I was thinking, it's all about the wholesomeness.
Yeah,
it's about the father. It's about remember who you are, Clark.
Right.
When he puts his arm around him, it's not about kicking footballs. It's about you have the greatest power in the world.
Right.
You could do whatever you want.
You're not meant to be rich from it. You're not.
But
meant
you're
to
here
be
to
sport.
Help somebody. Right. You're here to do. Yeah. You know, what do you say? You're here for a
you're
reason.
Here for a reason. I don't know what the reason is.
And then I remember the one thing I saw. There was a making of Star Wars years ago. Mark Hamill, and they show Luke Skywalker watching the sunset, and he says, "The thing is, he has all this force and all this powers, and the universe is at his hands." And all the world lies within himself.
Right.
Like, whatever he wants to become, it's him. And that shot of Luke watching the sunset is just like Superman in the wheat field.
You
really need those moments where you have the one solitary hero when he's looking at the whole world and going, you know what? I could change the world. It's up to me.
Well, you're seeing
what I do.
You're seeing somebody in their environment.
Yeah.
But you're also getting like you're reading into it.
But everybody does that.
But like
every single person watching that movie, my kids watching it, you all put yourself in that person's
shoes. Because
everybody
leaves home. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
when you're a kid,
and you don't know what's out there,
and you become an adult.
Yeah.
In the old days, you'd leave home. You went to fight a war,
or you went to college.
College is still leaving home, but it's not like going to fight a war.
I was gonna say that's the safe route. That's like I'm not gonna get shot.
And I see what you mean, you don't make that choice sometimes. Like I was lucky enough to.
No, but it goes back to even
the draft. Basically,
it even comes back to my family coming over when they left the old country. They came to the new world.
Right.
That was a whole new adventure.
Right.
That was you didn't know what was going to happen when you got to America.
But when people went to war, they didn't come back the same.
I think.
I think that's where Ma Kent's line was. He was leaving home, implying.
You know, that would
us.
Be a good Superman story. Why doesn't somebody write that one? Why don't Bendis and somebody write that where Superman gets inducted into an army? No, I'm serious. He has to go fight some galactic war.
Right, right.
And he, he. It's like Private Ryan or something. You know what I mean? It's Saving Private Superman.
But they that would be a great story,
like an intergalactic thing. And he shows up.
Where characters are just grabbed. But he's like, what are you doing with me? We're taking you.
No. But there's a lot of Superman guys. Yeah. You know, because he's good because he's on the Earth and the yellow sun. Right. But what if he's in a world where there's 20 other Supermen just as strong as he is, and they all go, you know, we could burn all these enemies with our heat vision and kill them all. Why don't we just do that? And then you get that whole, like, well, then we'll be just as bad as the bad guy.
Right, right.
But I guess it's hard to write it. I guess it's hard
Be hard to write it.
Oh, it looks like it is because I read the crap that comes out every Wednesday, and it looks like, oh, that would take some thinking. But to tell a moral story is actually pretty good because those are the ones people remember.
Yeah.
The reason why I remember your story from 40 years ago is because I remembered that whole thing about him going off to the war world and not killing people when he was a gladiator. Right. And I'm like, oh, this is really cool because Superman could kill him.
Right.
Like that.
Well, and they wanted him to kill him. And he decided not to.
He made a choice.
He was supposed to kill him.
Yeah.
And he refused to do
it. But that's because it's true to his character that goes back to the upbringing about what's good and evil. That's the story you need to tell people.
Right.
And that's why I get mad when I see people like, oh, Batman's great. Batman's great. The Punisher's great. The Punisher's not great. The Punisher's a villain. I don't know when everyone starts thinking he was like a superhero.
Right.
Because it's that whole Death Wish thing.
And that.
Which is from the
70s. Up in the 70s, right.
Which, like, I'm not going to follow your staff. I'm going to kill people.
Well, it was the era of vigilantism.
It's horrible, actually.
You had Bernard Goetz. You had that, you know.
Bernard Goetz was in the 80s, though.
Subway killing. Was that 80s or
that was
the 80s.
70s? He didn't kill a people. He shot them. He paralyzed them.
But I'm just saying, it's that vigilante.
Yeah, but everybody has that, like, frustration where they want to take the law into their own hands.
Justice isn't being served. So therefore, we have to serve justice.
No, but before we were watching this movie, I was like, as hokey as this was, my dad grew up with the Lone Ranger.
Right. Well, and he was...
On the radio.
He was the final ranger.
He was the last survivor of the Texas Rangers. They all got wiped out by Butch Cavendish. So anything, I remember my mom telling me my dad would listen to the radio. He'd come home, and he'd sit there, and he'd print on the Lone Ranger. Right. And he grew up with that.
Right.
And he'd read comics. And then when I grew up, he said, give me the Superman comics and the Superman TV show.
Right.
There's always this, like, you guys are trying to instill.
You're passing the torch.
Yeah, but because you go to religion, and it's all, you know, money to the church. But you're trying to give people the basic moral code. Like, you should help people.
Right.
You should do good things.
Right.
Batman's not about doing good things. Batman's about, you killed my parents, I'm going to beat the hell out of you.
Batman's a vengeance character.
But people love that, though.
But he was not done that way forever.
No, he was. He was goofy when I was a kid.
But, I mean, it's more of a recent invention that...
No, you just mentioned Neil Adams. It wasn't recent.
It was after that that he became, like, in the...
What, was that an outgrowth because of the movies that was going on?
In the last 20 years, he became the character who's...
No, but I'm saying when Denny O'Neill and Neil made them more of a serious character... Was that because of a response to what's going on in the world with the war going on? They're like, hey, he can't be goofy flying around with the Penguin and umbrellas and, you know.
I think it was they were testing the waters for the audience because the
audience was getting older. But then they did Green Arrow, Green Lantern, too.
See, I'm saying that the audience was getting older. At that point, they realized the comic companies in the 70s said, you know what, people aren't leaving after 7 years.
Well, it was a Marvel thing.
Not everybody is. Yeah. You know, some people still cycled off and read them only when they were kids.
Yeah.
But a lot of people were adults reading.
And they had money.
So at that point, they were like, okay, these people remember more than 7 years worth of stories.
Right.
The thing that Denny did, which I always loved and which they've kind of eroded a bit, was that because his parents were killed with guns, Batman hated guns.
He hated guns,
That was a terrific addition to a character. So you never want to see him, but... When I was a kid or teenager, I'd go to the places where comic fans would congregate.
Right.
The first comic store, like 1980s, but in the, you know, like secondhand.
I remember the first comic.
So you would go and you'd talk to people, and all these people, I remember saying, Batman should carry a gun.
Really?
And I'd be like, really? Why?
Oh, I remember seeing that Batman 89.
He should kill the Joker.
Oh, God.
And I'd say, well, I understand what you're saying, but that's not what the comic character is about.
No.
It's about redemption. You know,
and that's what bothered me in the 89 movie when he shows up with that jet at the end with the machine guns. I was just sitting there in the movie theater going, excuse me.
He didn't hit the Joker. He shot around him.
He blew up everything around him. But I was like, why is Batman shooting people? You know?
Because that was a big thing. And I always thought that was a good hook for the character because. Otherwise, he is the Punisher.
But no, you don't think it's your responsibility to create moral ethics as a writer for a comic book?
Yeah, you are. Don't you think?
I think you are, but I don't want to instill responsibility on you.
If I was writing the Punisher, I would find some way. He has a code. He must have some code. He's not going to kill an innocent.
Yeah.
But if any character you're writing, you have to be true to what you feel that.
Or you're writing about psycho serial killers.
Superman came out of the Depression era. He wasn't a vigilante necessarily.
No, but he was an immigrant.
He was definitely someone who tried to right wrongs. You know what? The first couple years of the book, he would be catching wife beaters and
slumlords and stuff like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was writing social justice injustice. Right. He was definitely that.
So what happened to why people stopped doing that?
Well, because
why isn't Superman out there like stopping drug dealers?
It's more interesting to have an alien invasion come because he's an alien and he's from another planet. I think it was just because it's been around.
No, but
so
most
long.
Of the stories now are like lost.
Yeah,
they don't look at the world outside of them and go, "Why can't I write about this?"
When I was working on Superman, it was important to me. Like I carved out. It's like, okay, I'm going to use Suicide Slum because I always liked the concept of. I grew up in a crappy neighborhood.
So, most people do, I think. And now looking back at the world, I think the world 90%.
Well, my mom had a bar, and I knew as a kid, I saw all these people, and they were like kind of lost.
Yeah.
But they weren't all bad.
No.
Some of them were bad.
No.
Some of them were just like they had bad circumstances.
But they were stuck in that
And that was
situation.
Interesting to me.
Yeah.
And that's what I think, you know, when I did Superman, my focus was always that. It was like, here's these characters that nobody thinks about.
Right.
And it was a way to humanize Superman.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, I'm off in space or I'm with the Justice League with my special club. You know what I mean? It's like, it'd be like the rich guy playing golf.
So you could take the
same story,
the same character, whether he had powers or no powers, and tell the same story. Just adapt it to the story.
Yeah, yeah, you
could. So instead of being on Maxima, whatever that planet was, or War World, he could be in Suicide City.
Yeah,
the same more the same dilemmas. I could do this. I could do right and wrong.
But that's what writing is about.
Yeah, but it's not anymore.
Okay.
I see these books. I pick them up every week like a fool.
Man.
Most of them are just pretty pictures.
I have a problem.
Not all of them.
Right. It's true. You can't. Because
I know. I don't want to generalize it. But a lot of the stuff I fluff through in like 2 seconds. I go, why did I just pay $5
for that? That's a matter of pacing. That's not really the story. It's like you're getting a 6-issue story that we used to tell in maybe one or two issues.
Yeah, but the problem is you're getting a lot of writers that are all like 40, 30. Years old that grew up.
Yeah.
I don't know where the there's a break somewhere.
I mean, ultimately, people want to write about. I mean, there was a period of time 10 years ago where it felt like, okay, we've really lost what a hero is because we have several generations who didn't have the sense of what it took to fight for freedoms and things like that.
No.
I mean, when I was a kid, my response to all that, I heard these stories from guys who fought in World War II or Korea or Vietnam later.
Right.
And they all were fighting for something. And then suddenly we got cynical because we realized, oh, it's about big business and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Well, the world intrudes on, as it always does, the world intrudes on fantasy. You know? And now
that's why all the characters
you
are
become
cynical.
Very cynical because it's like, oh, I always look at from my generation.
Yeah.
I don't know if you don't.
I
remember,
look at Han Solo as my hero.
But
and
do
he's
you remember
the
when Nixon
guy.
Resigned? You were too young.
I remember my dad having the newspaper saying Nixon quits.
I remember watching that on TV.
That must have been like
thinking,
insane.
Holy crap! I was
the
like,
president gave up.
It was 74, so I would have been like 15.
Yeah.
Whatever. Well, I was in high school. And
why
I
was that
thinking,
shocking, though?
Because it was an admission that he did wrong.
Which is like
it was
unheard
like,
of.
Wait, these guys are people we're supposed to look up because we've been raised.
Oh,
to
me,
look up
it's
to
like
people.
When the priests get caught. To be honest with you,
because
to me, I was raised to believe that's like God's representative on Earth, and God's representative on Earth doesn't do things to children.
So here's what you have to do if you're a cynic, like I am.
Yeah.
I am definitely a cynic.
Oh, I know. I trust you. I hang out with you.
You have to go.
He
okay.
beats up small pets and dogs.
Right. No, I don't. Yeah. But you have to realize that not everybody is bad. But
no, my mom
like
always
that.
Says that.
It
there's good in everybody. And then when,
But I mean, I don't mean.
She grew
like,
up in the Depression, though. She always says it because you can't look at the world as negative. There's still good left
good
in
people. Good people can do bad things. Bad people can do good things.
They don't
but
get
what
reported
saying,
on the news at night.
Right. But what I'm saying is, I think not every, just like not every policeman's corrupt.
No.
Not every politician is.
Not every priest is doing something.
But the problem
horrible.
Is you have an overriding. Felt a sense from what you see
that
oh man we should just
give
up
because
nobody's but that's what you try to fight against.
But that's just perpetuated by the entertainment.
It is.
That's what I'm saying. So if you think that way, you're going to read The Walking Dead and go, God, this is depressing because everybody's trying to kill each other. I'm like, it's like the most is it nihilistic? Is that the thing where you think everything's just like doom and gloom?
Yeah.
So and to come out and be the goody two-shoe guys, you looked at as a sucker.
Right.
Superman is considered a sucker.
And that's what I'm saying.
That's what's sad.
We worked against that for the time. And we tried to make him cool without But by contrast,
and ultimately,
we wound up having to kill him to have people, and that was all done as a like a fan thing too. It's like,
yeah, but didn't you see, here's how they're going to look at it. Did you notice that the weird thing is when he did die, and people thought it was real, there was a weird outcry of it because I think people didn't want to admit to it.
But that's what we were trying, even though we didn't know that was going to happen. What we were trying to do is the whole
reignite
it. It was like, here, with him gone, you're going to go, yeah, we miss him.
Yeah.
We didn't value him.
Friend. Yeah.
We didn't value him when he was here because he just always did the right thing and we didn't think
about
it.
Well, honestly, tonight watching that movie, I realized, Chris, it's very sad in a way to watch that movie because it is like they're all gone now.
Yeah.
Christopher Reeve is gone. Yep. Margaret Kidder died this year. Even the World Trade Center is gone.
Yeah.
They flew by that at one point. I go, oh, that's not there either. So it's like a time capsule. But, you know, I know there are actors playing a role, but there's a sadness that comes to seeing it when they're flying through the sky young.
Yeah, yeah.
He's 24, I think. I was like, oh, my God, he was only 24 years old?
Yeah.
That's an amazing ability for a 24-year-old to pull it off. He was supposed to be playing a 30-year-old guy.
He was good.
He was very good.
Superman in and bad Clark movies. Kent. But I'm saying,
okay.
He was always
You know
good
why I think that
movies.
Is? Because I think he believed in his,
he projected
the character.
That. He projected the right.
He might have had a shitty script, but he actually said, you know what? I got to believe that. I've seen people play parts where they don't believe it, and you can tell.
No, it falls flat. You need, but that's what.
And that's why Superman Returns, I was watching this tonight. You know why Superman Returns is bad? It's trying to imitate something.
It is. Right.
It's like impressionist. Remember years ago there was a show called The Copycats where you get Rich Little and Frank Portion?
They were trying to tack on to here's our
by hitting the same notes. They're like, oh, you're going to like this because we're doing the music. Looks like Christopher.
Brandon Routh was great.
Very good actor. But it wasn't Christopher Reeve.
Right. It was like they were trying too hard to
And the whole time it kept reminding you of that. Yeah. Like, oh, look, Christopher Reeve's gone.
Right.
Which now, looking back, was probably a bad choice for Bryan Singer to go, why don't I just make you remember nostalgia?
Warner had gone through different iterations where they're going to reinvent it, and they went with his, which was more of a tribute.
Yeah, the love letter to Richard Donner, which I'm like, that's all well and good, but I can just go put that in the DVR.
Well,
I don't need
to
go do
that. Watching this on the big screen, the thing that really stood out to me.
What?
Were all the side characters, all the
Jimmy
supporting
parts. I heard you laughing at Jimmy and Perry.
But I'm saying, like, they all sold their characters.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Glenn Ford
as the
always
dad,
chokes
yeah.
me up because he feels so authentic.
He's and only Ma, on screen for about 5 minutes.
Right, and Ma Kent, Phyllis Thaxter, was great because she really just projected it. They bought
She doesn't say much at all.
But her lines are very important. Yeah. In other words, they carry
the weight of what they needed to say. I actually think Glenn Ford is much better than Marlon Brando, to be honest with you.
Well, Brando's good, and Brando actually is better in the
Fortress of Solitude part, not
that
the beginning.
Whole,
yeah.
No, and that his whole thing
his
in there is more heartfelt.
Yeah, because when I'm watching the Krypton thing, I'm trying to find out where's the cue cards. I'm like, I keep going, is it right on the baby's diaper? Is it over here on the wall? Because he literally looks like he's walking like a zombie through it, like. He's not saying it. He must have had time to read the dialogue when he was just doing it.
And by being Marlon Brando, he brings a lot to lines that he's reading that aren't necessarily great. In other words, he brings Marlon Brando to that. The stuff that's great.
More
is
so than Russell Crowe did in that part, which I was like.
The Smallville stuff is very authentic and it still feels heartfelt.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what hooks you. And that's what gives you what you can
buy. I was watching Glenn Ford tonight, and I remember John Schneider being on Smallville.
He was great, too,
because he actually struck home with that very human. Yeah. Like, no matter what Clark did, he was always like, Clark, you know, you're not supposed to do that. Because why?
But, I mean, he had a warmth to it.
Yeah, genuine.
That was the whole key to Smallville.
I tell you, when Glenn Ford dies, that scared me as a kid, like you wouldn't believe. Because that's how quick, like, death just came.
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't big alien villains or anything.
Right.
He just like had a heart attack. I go, you know, I was haunted by that, literally, because he just falls down. People just die like that. It's like
Clark killed him. Come
Clark
on,
killed
Pop,
him.
Run.
The dog did, too. I noticed when they're all running through, the dog runs the other way. I'm like, stupid dog.
We don't want the dog
in the
scene.
We don't want the dog in the scene. Dad's
the dog
dead.
Trainer's like, come
the
this
dog,
way.
You know, they say dogs will eat their masters within 24 hours after they're dead. I saw that in the paper the other day. They said cats, sure.
Good luck to you,
Harley.
Your wife's away.
Harley, Dewey, just call the house every day, will you? If I don't answer the phone, send help. Call 911. Harley's
Should
munching
I call
on
animal
me.
Animal control.
I know. Harley's really fed. But anyway, so there was
Harley's really getting.
Wow, she got some girth on her now. So,
Where's Mitch?
I don't know. Anybody seen Mitch Lee? No, but all right. Here's back to Superman. Superman, always remember who you are. You're here for a reason.
Yep.
What was the other one you said?
The great people if they want to be.
They're the great people if they want to be. It's got some great. Tom Mankiewicz is the screenwriter.
Yeah.
Was that him in the Daily Planet typing?
I don't know. I don't.
There was a guy there.
Richard Donner was obviously the guy watching the TV who tells Clark he's in the way.
Was that him?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. It was in.
Oh, when he said, "Get your head down," he goes, "Oh, how's Peggy suit or whatever the guy's."
Right. Yeah, that's Donner. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So he had a cameo.
I thought Mankiewicz was when Jimmy's walking by and there's a guy typing. And he goes, hey, Jimmy, or something like that.
But Mankiewicz, I think, gave it, you know, whatever he did.
Grounded.
But we can't know that because we've never seen each script. Like
there was a lot of versions.
Robert Benton is one of the writers credited, and Robert Benton wrote some fantastic character
stuff. I heard the Mario Puzo stuff's out there.
Well, like, he probably wrote the main idea.
Like Telly Savalas is in it and all that stuff. I've heard those stories.
He plotted it. These other guys added depth to it.
Yeah.
But Robert Benton did like movies with Paul Newman, Nobody's Fool, and he did.
Yeah.
He did a bunch of Hollywood. He wrote and directed movies on his own. Robert Benton had this.
Wait a minute. Is he
Robert? I don't know if he's Bob. No, Robert Benton. It's Benton.
Oh, I was like, isn't there another actor by that
Robbie
name?
Robbie Benson. You're
thinking. Yeah. No, he's somebody's
father.
Robert
Benton always had this character. So I feel kind of like the small moments and the very genuine human moments probably came from that second draft. And I think Mankiewicz added touches
polished
to it, but I think Mankiewicz came from Bond. And Mankiewicz kind of framed it in a more Bond way.
Nuclear weapon thing, you think that's all him?
Because that's the only template they would have to do a big budget.
See, I don't remember the ending as much as I do the other parts, which is weird about Superman.
Yeah.
You know that?
Yeah.
Like the whole thing, you would think the whole nuclear bombs would be the
big
James Bond finish. But I remember when he with her at the apartment. By the way, what kind of pay rate was Lois Lane getting to have that penthouse? I was thinking that tonight, like, holy shit, she's got
a
great apartment.
She probably inherited it from a relative.
General Lane was rich. She said her sister had three kids and a mortgage. Obviously, she didn't get the inheritance.
Right.
But, no, there's those quiet moments when he's talking to her. I don't lie.
Right.
Which is another thing,
those
too.
Those are very genuine.
Yeah, he's like, I don't lie.
And those are the scenes, if you watch the extras on the first movie.
They did all those
rehearsals. Those were all the audition scenes.
Audition scenes, yeah.
So the actors were really familiar
with
that.
Oh, I noticed that watching tonight. It's like he's done this so many times, it's not funny.
Because they were so familiar, it felt like a genuine conversation.
Right.
They didn't have to look at a script.
No, I noticed that too. They were walking around. He did it with Deborah Winger. He did it with, like, what was the girl married to Spielberg?
Well, it was also the girl who was in... I forgot her name now. She was in Greece.
Stocker Channing?
Yeah, she read.
She was Lois?
Yeah, she's actually, I think one of the scenes has her reading.
She was like in her 30s.
Margot Kidder was older than.
Oh, Christopher Reeve?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She was.
Well, she just died
in
her
later 20s or something.
60 something.
But I mean, they were.
Yeah.
I think having that. All that dialogue down perfect.
No, he does such a great job with the whole. You notice you see his body.
She did too. She has this great, you know, she's got the great reactions and stuff. And then,
she acts like really good. Do you ever notice when he does his shoulders thing? I always work on that.
Oh, yeah.
When he's Clark, he stoops
and
literally, and he straightens up. When he does that one scene and his voice changes and it's like suddenly puts his chest out and his shoulders back. I go, oh my God.
Yeah.
I could believe. You wouldn't recognize the two
guys.
I know
it's
a movie, too.
The other thing that's funny is, of course, we're wearing
glasses.
Kind of small lens glasses.
Well, I don't
have
my big
ones.
I know,
the
big
ass ones. They were the size of, like, a crank-out window, right? I mean, they were giant in the
70s. Yeah.
So it's easier to hide behind something that where you're wearing, like, 4-inch window panes over each eye with a big frame.
Well, you know what, though? I always liked Superman 2 better because I saw it as a kid. I saw it in 81. I was watching Raiders last night because it had more excitement and adventure in it.
Yeah.
But now I'm watching back. I go, actually, they're two different movies. Yeah. You really can't compare them. I like Superman 2.
Never liked
2.
It because...
It's so corny.
It was also poisoned for me.
Why?
Because... Donner was fired, and I knew that going in because it was big news that he had been fired.
Richard Leister was the guy from the Beatles movies, which
Lester
were like
had
wacky.
Done a bunch of,
Leister,
he had done a bunch of funny kind of wacky stuff.
No, he did the Three Musketeer movies.
Right.
which I remember seeing those in the 70s,
and he did
too.
That for the Michael Salkinds, York. The Salkinds produced those.
Yeah, they were kind of almost like slapsticky.
They weren't bad. They were,
no,
they
weren't
were
bad, but at the for their time,
but his whole thing made it more campy.
Notice no man talks about the Three Musketeer movies anymore.
No, but I mean, he made it more campy. And the thing I always remember is the scene with, like,
the guy in the phone booth.
The guy in the phone booth.
Yes, yes.
And it's like, it was.
He's on the phone telling a joke. Aha! And the wind's blowing.
The scene at the end where Clark goes back for revenge against the guy in the diner.
I always like that.
He wouldn't do that.
Yes, he would.
There's a character thing where I'm the writer. I'm telling you, that's not what he would do.
Oh, no. I always thought that was one of the best parts.
He wouldn't. See, that's anti-Clark.
Really?
Yeah, he wouldn't go after.
That's dark Clark. That's dark Clark.
Exactly.
Dark.
That
kid.
Always bothered me. Oh. But a lot of people. Well,
how about
in
the Man of Steel? Because when he wrecks that guy's truck, my son goes, "Wow, Superman's a dick."
Yeah.
Because the guy threw a beer
at
him.
It's a different time.
So he ruined the entire guy's livelihood. It's
it's a different, it's a different time.
I'm out of a job now, buddy.
It's a different time. And he was definitely a different Clark. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm just saying the old Clark was better than the new Clark. Why did, if they made a movie like the 78 one today, it would be like a comedy. I think the Shazam movie coming out is probably going to be more. But even that's playing like slapstick.
Wonder
almost.
Woman touched on Superman. The Wonder Woman movie had like bits and pieces that were definitely inspired.
Well, the
and
fish
it was
out
fun.
Of water.
Yeah,
and
no,
the whole scene in the alley with her catching the slug.
Yeah. And her in the store getting her clothes.
Oh, yeah. That. I tell you, the only part that loses me in Wonder Woman is after she goes across that. No man's land, and then it just goes out the window because I didn't go for the villain,
right?
That old man in that giant CGI suit. I was like, "What? You're kidding me, right?"
Yeah.
The little tiny head. It looked like looked like Beetlejuice.
Yeah. Hey, but that, you know.
And then she had these like the power of love fighting. I'm like,
but I
like
that. I mean, I felt that made her distinctive because that's what they've tried to do within the last 30 years.
That was the Perez stuff.
You know, from the Perez stuff, but that feeling of her being an ambassador.
Yeah,
that was her gig.
So Superman 1, Superman 2, you don't like it because I liked it because it was too comic book-y, or like because it was comic book action.
Hated the pulling the shield off and throwing.
Oh God, no! There was stuff there that I don't know what happened with.
But I mean, again,
that made no sense to me.
There's problems
or
with the
how
first
about when he
one
disappeared?
Too, but it just the second one didn't have the warmth.
Remember
that
when
the
he disappeared and he was in multiple? Oh, we used to do this in school.
Right.
What school? Where? Right. When did he do that? I don't remember that.
The first one had like a warmth. It would be like the first one was painted by Norman Rockwell.
It was like Star Wars.
And the
second first
one was painted
one,
by
Boris. And then you look at the other one. You're like, whoa, Return of the Jedi is the same guy?
Well, it just didn't have the warmth. It didn't have that. And that's what
and
I think
Superman
Donner
3
brought to it.
Is a cocaine-fueled mess. That's the way I look at it.
But I like the
what,
Superman
Richard Pryor?
As two different characters. I like that whole
that
sequence
part.
Was great.
When he's in the bar?
Yeah.
But my son...
Annette O'Toole is great.
Oh,
that
she's,
whole Smallville
well, she's really
stuff
cute.
Was fun.
But Owen asked years ago, I put those on for him. I remember we watched Superman 3 on New Year's Eve because we'd watch a movie on New Year's Eve. And that's the one they picked. Owen goes, is he fighting anybody or is that all in his head? And I'm like, I don't know. I really don't know if he's in an empty junkyard.
Right.
Because was it physically two different people or was that just like a mind game?
I think it was two people.
You do? You think he actually separated?
When we were
because
watching,
when he put him in the garbage.
No, I know. But I mean, when we were watching this one, I just suddenly, and again, I don't think I've thought of this watching it, but being on the big screen, I was thinking to myself, when he's going back and
time.
Spinning the earth backwards.
Which still makes no sense. Sometimes.
It made me think about something. It made me think, is he actually turning time back? Or is he traveling back in time?
I thought he turned the whole world back.
No, I know. The implication is that. But maybe that's him watching, like, he's keeping track of how far back
to
go.
Well, you notice he's looking down.
Yeah.
He does that. He looks down at the earth as he's spinning.
Would you, if you looked at it as not him turning the entire time backwards, but him actually traveling through time.
To go to that one point where he can save Lois.
To go to that point that made sense to save Lois. Then it kind of works.
Well, if that was the only, but if he was the only one traveling
if
time,
if he was time travel,
then why would the dam repair itself?
He could duplicate himself.
Yeah, but it went backwards.
But what I'm saying is that's him viewing it.
I always thought.
I'm just saying, if you took it like him watching, basically just to keep track of where I'm going to jump back in.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that all that undid itself, but that he could jump back. It would be 15 minutes in time.
Yeah.
before Lois dies,
right,
and wind up doing the things that his other part was also doing. Because clearly he did those other things.
He couldn't be in two places at once. That's why Lois died.
Right, but he did those other things. So that's, I was thinking about that. Why didn't I ever think of that? That's an idea, at least, that he himself just went back in time.
Only
Superman. Duplicating himself. Yeah. Because Superman could, if you buy it, that he could time travel more than that he could turn.
Well, I said once before, is he in this? Is he going to meet himself? Because he's actually,
he's knows like Marty
McFly
at,
and Back to the Future too. He's in the same scene twice.
And if you're writing a time travel story, you come up with the rules.
Yeah, but where does he go?
The fact that everybody
where does the other Superman go? Or he changes.
He knows
the
where he was, so he can go to the places he didn't get to.
Yeah.
He saves Lois. But he's still the other version of him still saving, and then he catches up.
And then it goes
to
back and catches himself. Dude, you give me a headache.
But that,
have another beer
that
over
makes
here,
sense
please.
To me. While I was watching, I was thinking, you know, maybe
because
I
told
this
you all the way here, where what happened?
Because it seems like it should all undo.
Yeah.
But yet it didn't.
No, it did.
Somehow he found time to save her, in addition to stuff still happened that he saved.
So he was in two places at once.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
That's my new theory. That he actually went back in time rather than turning
as the
time
other
back.
Superman's saving everything, he goes back and he's there. Yeah, there, that would explain it.
He's going past. He's well breaking
and
the
then
speed
he doesn't
of sound
need to,
and everything.
Then he
else.
Doesn't need to go into the future.
He doesn't have to fix
because she
stuff.
Saved her.
He just has to do things that he wasn't able to do while he was fixing other stuff.
Yeah.
So he can save Lois, or he could save maybe countless other people. That's my theory now.
All right. Took you 40 years to get to
it
that.
It did.
Is that sad?
But that's a writer looking at it as from a writer's point of view.
Yeah.
And then I kept thinking, like watching like the Smallville scenes. I kept thinking, wow, this really, again, my brain's always working on story ideas.
Yeah,
and I was like, hey, there's an idea here. You know, just
oh, there's
in
another storyline.
Yeah, yeah. In the 80s, Carlin and Andy Helfer went to work for Superboy.
Yeah, the TV show.
As
right.
story editors because Jeanette Kahn wanted them supervising.
Yeah, that first season
it's
horrendous.
Like crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
So they got on there, and one of the coolest things was Carlin got them to hire Glenn Ford to play Pa Kent in an episode.
No.
Yeah, he's in one.
Is he?
It was one of the last things Glenn Ford did.
Oh, really? I have those on DVD. I'll have to watch them.
Whenever season Carlin started.
Really? Glenn
two,
Ford was on that?
Glenn Ford.
Oh.
And then they also brought in
Susanna York. Yeah.
To play Lara.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah. And that was when Mike and Andy were on the thing.
Well, no. George Lazenby played
Jor-El. He played Jor-El, but
oh, they
Susanna
had her
York
play the mother?
Was, yeah.
Oh. I don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Glenn Ford was on that?
Yeah. And it was a great episode that I think Mike and Andy wrote. It was
I don't
just
even
very heartfelt.
Because it was only 4 or 5 seasons, that show.
Yeah.
The
but
first
it was season 2.
Horrendous.
It was mostly, and by season 3, they had gotten...
they was working for some like National Enquirer thing.
But they had gotten a good guy who was a story editor who wound up working on the Superman cartoon, too. The Superman Adventures.
Oh, Joseph Semper?
Stan Berkowitz. I think his name was Stan Berkowitz. And he really kind of tied stuff together, and Mike and Andy were no longer necessary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they first jumped in.
God forbid somebody actually made a coherent storyline.
Yeah. Well, when Mike and Andy jumped in, it was like, please help these guys.
Yeah.
And they tried to tie stuff together.
Because before it was one-off. I think they were making up as they go.
No,
there was no,
right, no
framework.
Carrie Bates was working on that.
I know, but it seemed like every week, we're going to do Werewolf this week. This week we're going to do this.
I think Carrie is a really good... He's kind of underrated because there's a certain point where people said,
didn't
oh, we don't
like
this
Mission Impossible,
stuff.
The TV show?
I don't know. Maybe the
I thought he did,
a reboot?
I thought he did some TV work, Carrie.
He wrote the Christopher Columbus movie. That the Saul kinds
well,
did.
Christopher Reeve, 1492.
The one that had Brando in it too.
Yeah.
Carrie Bates wrote that.
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
Carrie Bates became their
he's
like in-house
buddy.
Writer.
Yeah.
And Carrie's a great writer. If you read the,
I remember reading his
he
Flash
did Captain
stuff.
Atom during that relaunch in the 87, 88, somewhere around there.
No, I didn't read those.
It's great.
Oh, yeah?
Great stuff. He did The Flash. He was great.
I remember The Flash.
You know,
yeah.
I think working under Julie.
I remember him putting himself in his own book.
Well, working under Julie Schwartz was a little bit of a taskmaster, and Julie would basically, he wasn't like an editor who said, come up with a story. Julie would say, here, I got these cover ideas from artists who did covers. You have
to write a story around that.
That was his whole thing.
They would write a story based on a cover?
He would come up with a cover idea, and then the writers would have to
write. Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's like that guy that made those movies in the 50s, that guy Castle. He would make the movie poster, and then he'd have to go make a Roger Corman movie.
And Julie liked to work that way because it felt spontaneous for him.
Really? Oh, but maybe that's why the stories were so disjointed, though.
The writers just have to... Well, they all were... Right, there was no continuity.
No.
The writers worked outside his hallway.
Yeah.
Sitting there typing.
I've heard that. Yeah. I remember the first... Paul Kupperberg told me there's people literally sitting there typing.
Yeah, in 77, I remember going up to the offices and seeing like little... There was like outside of a door...
Yeah, like a cubby.
A student-sized desk.
Right.
Portable little really tiny typewriter stand. Yeah. There's Kerry Bates. There's Elliot Magg. And then they're typing. They also got paid at the end of the day.
I know that, but...
But
it seems archaic nowadays.
Well, it's under your thumb. It's like... Yeah. How much control does the editor have over?
And Julie was just walking up and down the halls all day.
Julie basically dictated stuff. So up until Marv writing those action comics with Gil Kane drawing them, I think Marv kind of pushed against it because Julie knew Marv.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like he maybe gave him a little more leeway.
Yeah.
But he still had that control. Whereas with us, Carlin was the clearinghouse. We threw ideas at him, and he'd say yes or no, or he'd spin them back at you. He came up with the ideas and spun them to us. We all got to come up with our own stuff.
Oh, well, there you go.
And that was, I mean, because of that, I was a big continuity fan. I liked the Marvels because they
had that history. Yeah. They all tied into
each other. Really, that was my biggest goal, is to try to get that to be cohesive.
I was thinking tonight, imagine if Byrne was sitting next to us in the theater. I did think that for a brief moment. I go, I wonder if Byrne went to go see this.
Well,
I could see him go out.
John was a huge fan of that.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
I mean, he and I had conversations.
Maybe he's probably at the Richfield show. That's when he went over there to see.
He's probably close
nearby. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no. But it is true though. When you go through all that stuff, you definitely have a feeling for what could you spin off of this. That's what I kept thinking.
Well, you know what, I was watching today. I go, this wouldn't work now because everybody wants action, 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 action. It's like the reason why the Captain America, the first Avenger movie, works probably better than the other ones. Is because it's quieter, even though it's in World War II, because there's more character moments in it.
Right, he's not. You don't get immediate.
He's not saving the world. Yeah, it's all like simple stuff.
Like with the problem, and you and I talked about this. It's like this with the fact that they can do so much with digital effects.
Yeah.
It's like turning on a faucet.
Oh yeah.
In the old days, you could only fill a small cup.
Yeah, now you can fill a bathtub.
Now you could fill a bathtub.
Yeah.
So therefore, there's no.
But they're writing for the bathtub,
reason,
though.
But there's no business reason not to put the giant special effect in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
But me as a viewer, I get tired by the end. Yeah. It's like, oh, wait, we're going to do yet something bigger.
Yes.
I'm worn out from the opening sequence.
I think they tried that in that Batman-Superman movie by saying, oh, look at all the collateral damage.
Yes.
And Batman was responding to the fact that buildings fell on people and stuff.
I still stand up for that movie.
I actually said it was a good movie. People yell at me. They go, what are you, stupid? I go... They all throw that Martha thing at me.
The extended one is better.
I know.
It is really good.
I go, the Martha thing was just to show him humanized.
Yeah.
Like, if this Superman was in that Batman movie, like the Christopher Reeve one, it never would have happened.
No.
It would have been like, oh, I can't be mad at that guy.
Right.
Why? Because he's helping old ladies across the street.
Right.
It would be like, what a dick you are.
Right.
you know?
It's
he didn't mean for those buildings to fall down. He was trying to stop it.
Right.
But they didn't convey that.
Right. No, and that's the difference in time. But then, like you said, there's still a time to be hopeful.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's honestly missing from most of these movies now.
But it's missing from the feeling.
It's missing from outside the door.
From comics as well.
Yeah.
Because there's a period, like I told you, I felt like we're seriously in a place where people don't understand what a hero is.
No.
Now, Superman was 1930s, right?
Yeah.
Spider-Man was 1960s.
60s, yeah.
Spider-Man still had that, and that's like that speaking of Stan Lee.
Gee whiz, yeah.
It wasn't just that. It was the fact that he gets these powers, tries to capitalize on them, and he realizes something happens because...
Right. Responsibility, great power.
And that gave him his whole thing.
Yeah.
That's everything.
Yeah.
That's why that's such an important scene, is that it gave him his whole worldview of being how to use my powers.
Yeah.
You know, and that's incredible.
And the Captain America, they almost had it.
Yeah.
Because when he was like, you know, I don't like bullies. I'm stronger than everybody.
But in Superman, it's Doc Kent talking to him.
Yeah.
That's where you get it, and that's what basically...
All right, so which ones don't work now? Thor, the big movie doesn't work too much now because he's out of space. Well, you can do something with it. Yeah, but when they make him humble, that's a better story.
Yeah, well, in the first Thor movie, they made him learned, humble. Yeah, he was a total dick in the beginning. Yeah, and at the very end, he learns about it. Yeah. Hard to take. And then suddenly he's humble.
Yeah.
That's good. That's the whole Marvel formula.
I know, but when they don't, like Tony Stark is a dick, and then suddenly it's like, oh
Tony
my God.
Tony Stark was a rich guy, and suddenly, he's killing people, he's got shrapnel in his heart. Yeah,
from his own weapons. Rethink,
but that's, it's like anybody going through, that's what I'm saying. Like,
those are the better stories.
But this gets back to Ma Kent telling him,
remember who you are.
Yeah, remember. Yeah. Remember us.
And the Captain America movie, the guy points to him like, remember, you're a good person.
Yeah. That was what he tells him. That's what you all need to do is when you go off and become an adult, remember.
But they don't have that in Batman.
No. Yeah.
Batman, Alfred was kind of it, but they don't even. Now they're all like mercenary commandos. Yeah.
Well, and that's part of the genre. It's the Punisher influence.
With a big car.
It's all about shooting up bad guys or whatever.
Yeah.
That was another good thing in the beginning, right? They're getting robbed. Clark Kent.
Oh yeah, I always noticed that with the finger. But he moves the guy's gun with the finger.
On you can't solve society's ills with a gun.
Yeah,
it's like wow, there you go. Pull that quote and put it out in the.
Oh
internet.
God forbid they did that. I always thought that was great though. He just took his one finger, just
and the guy's like, going, "What are you doing? Yeah. What the hell?"
Yeah, and it was like, how strong is this guy? Is he doing this to him? You know, he could kill him right there. But he doesn't. He's restrained. He could just.
But he saves Lois, but he pretends to be a wimp.
Right.
He doesn't take credit. He's the personification of the humble Midwestern value guy.
Oh, so now he's a Midwestern guy.
It is.
Is that a Kansas thing?
Well, it's a Midwestern thing only because.
Why?
It could be a New England thing,
too. No, it can't. New England, we're more pragmatic. We would do it for money. I'll save you, but how much am I getting for it?
But I'm just saying that there's a feeling.
There's a farm thing.
It's like I'm willing to give up the glory because I know I did the right thing.
Well, didn't you tell me that?
And it's Peter Parker saving people, even though the police are shooting at him. Yeah. He's still doing the right thing, even though they think he's.
Or somebody else told me that. It's a Midwest thing. You don't
really. Well, there's an ethic to it that
promote yourself.
You grow up with, and not everybody's like that. Obviously.
No, but I've heard this from other people.
It depends on the families, but I grew up. You didn't. Basically, if you were a peacock, you didn't show that you were a peacock,
which is
what the story of Superman is.
He's
a peacock, but he can't let anybody know.
Yeah.
Because that's bragging.
Right.
You know, you do the work, you put your head down, you do the hard work, and the reward will be when people
like
recognize
Booster Gold, who's a jerk. Yeah. It shows everybody how flashy
he is. That, and again, if you look at Booster Gold and you think about, that's a valid thing, but who did it? I mean, it is kind of like, that's why each creator brings something different to it.
I always thought that's. I was like, what's the point of this character?
He was kind of like the NASCAR. He was the NASCAR guy.
Yeah.
But I mean, Wade takes his own lesson from the Superman movie and
Deadpool. The same thing.
You get the kind of the right parts, but you synthesize it in a slightly different way based on how you grew up, maybe. I mean, when we were on Superman, I had a very distinct vision of what Clark's upbringing was. And what Smallville was like, because I filtered it through my memories.
Right.
Jurgens had a different upbringing.
He's Midwest.
And he filtered, he's Minnesota.
Yeah.
He filtered it through a slightly different way because he grew up probably more middle class.
And Joe Siegel, those guys are Ohio.
And those guys were poor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think it's the difference between, looking at your town, Midwest,
more middle class. So Scott Snyder must tell a different story because he grew up pretty well off.
But I'm saying Midwest and middle class, what you're coming up with is more like Archie to me. That's your upbringing.
No, and I told you, in the world in general,
for me it was darker, but looking for brightness.
Yeah, but I'm saying that the majority of the world out there is not rich people.
No, it isn't.
And that's maybe why the characters that are everyday guys appeal more.
Yeah. Well, that's why the rich, like Bruce Wayne, is a rich guy.
But are you going to look back at all the different writers and go, which guys grew up middle class?
No, but I think you can see the guys, think about it. The guys who worked in comics in the 40s when all these characters were created.
All Depression and World War II guys.
That was like a slum profession.
Yeah.
Comics didn't
pay. It wasn't glamorous.
They paid shit for wages.
Yeah.
So, and all those guys came up.
It was a blue collar
job. The school of hard knocks, as they put it.
Right.
A lot of them went into war, out of war, got back into comics, Kirby, all those guys.
Like factory workers.
So it is. So their ethic is different than if they were born.
And then you got the Starlins and the Engelharts and the Thomases from the 60s. And the.
And they could have grown up poor.
But it was a different
everybody
time.
Everybody filters like justice or social justice through their own experience.
And then the Millers and the Simonsons and the Wades are all from an effort group.
And again, you can't say, oh, this guy came from a nicer place.
I'm just curious if you start finding out where everyone's from.
But it all does.
Where's Walt from?
Walt's from, I think, Massachusetts.
Yeah, he's from around here, yeah.
I mean, it all affects how you.
What writers are from California, though?
Evanier.
Oh, is he? No, but I'm saying.
Baldini, probably.
Baldini. More Hollywood type guys. Yeah.
But I mean, every area's got the farm.
Any Florida guys?
Every state would have a farm.
Pep Rotter.
There's always farming. You know what I mean? So there's always a rural area. Yeah. There's always rural versus city.
Yeah.
And those are the contrasts. I grew up in the city.
Where's Miller from?
Baltimore.
Oh, really? So Frank's from Baltimore?
That's no cakewalk.
I was going to say, that explains a little bit. Is he really from Baltimore? Okay.
So, I mean, it all affects your worldview. So, I mean, you filter stuff through that.
I'd love to read books from kids that grew up in the white picket fence with the...
But I think that's kind of the... Again, you know, it's nothing wrong with it.
No, I know.
Thank God that some people have, like, the good upbringing and went to college.
No, but that translates into the stories they come up with.
And some people come from that and write about the oppressed.
But it's
different knowing how it feels as opposed to being... Like, I can't... Neither of us can figure out what it would be like to actually be
in metropolis.
A minority growing up because the rules are different.
Yes.
I grew up, my mom ran a tavern.
Yeah.
And it
Single
barely,
mom.
All it did was we paid our bills and we had a place to live. And Correct. It was a dump.
Yeah. But I wasn't too far from that. Yeah.
90% of the kids in my neighborhood were Puerto Rican and Mexican.
Yeah.
And they were all my friends and I was part of that.
Yeah.
But because of that, I have a sensitivity to how government works towards those neighborhoods because my mom could never get loans because the bank wouldn't loan her money
because she was
in Red Line District.
I know how it works.
So I mean, but we were still well off, and it doesn't matter as long as you're loved. I mean, it sounds stupid, but if you grew up in a loving situation, even if not everybody loved you, but somebody loved you.
You're nobody until somebody loves you too, Martin.
Yeah. I mean, you build.
Well, here goes one for you. So Superman grows up with nothing in Kansas.
But he was
loved. And Bruce Wayne doesn't have that
right,
because it's
no
taken
love.
Away from him.
Right,
so that's why he's a soulless character.
Billy Batson
was an orphan.
Abandoned, orphaned on the street.
Well, he tries to find a family.
Well, that was my take on it, was that
he had Mary and uncle.
That makes sense. But I mean, it's like... It's a cliche.
No, but it's
like,
it's kind of interesting, though.
Cliche
because
is like when you think about how, like on how, if you listen to Howard Stern, it's like any stripper or porn star has some kind of father
daddy
issues.
Yeah, he always says
left
that. Yeah.
Or something. And there is probably a nugget of truth in that because we all want what we felt like we didn't get.
Right.
You know, and we find ways to get it in different ways.
Yeah.
Like for me, I wanted attention because I grew up, my mom raised
us
alone. I wanted that attention. I never had any father side.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, if I become famous, then I'll finally get
famous.
The attention. Yeah. It's a kid thing. You know,
I know. Even my kid says nowadays, I want to be famous. But what does that mean?
Well, it was like, I wanted the attention of the people in the
family.
Yeah,
I just
wanted
financial security. That's what I always wanted.
Well, I wanted somebody to pay attention.
I didn't
want
to be
validate me.
I didn't want to worry about not paying the rent next month or something. Because that's the way I grew up.
Yeah.
You know?
But I mean, it was a validation for me was to be able to... And I liked what I did. And I was like amazed that I could do what I wanted to do when I was a kid. You know, I mean, that path didn't seem like it was clear, but it opened up.
So, but did you want to write? When did you learn it? When did you know you knew how to draw?
When I was maybe 5.
Yeah, I could do that too.
But I was like 3.
Yeah, but you didn't think you were
going to
make a
drawing.
Career out of it.
I didn't think that. No, and my mom, she steered me towards.
Like real
other
work,
things.
Like
factory
work.
Yeah, because I went to a technical school for high school, and I had that big standoff. I wanted to do the commercial art program.
Yep.
She said, "They're telling me at school that you're suitable for the pre-engineering course."
Yeah, I remember those aptitude tests.
I don't want to have to do that.
Yeah.
And she said, "Well, can't you do that on the side and do this for your Yeah. And I said, I want to be an artist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I had that discussion.
In my case, yeah. It worked in my favor because my mom always wanted to be a creative artist. My mom encouraged me too. She couldn't do any of that. She had to go to work.
Yeah, but my dad was always the more pragmatic. Like, what if you hurt your hand?
Yeah.
Then you're going to be up the shit creek because you wouldn't have a career. So you better go learn book stuff.
Or you can learn to draw with your feet.
I can learn to draw with my feet. Yeah. No.
No, but so everybody's got their own kind of thing that their own hill to climb.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what I think when I look at any of these movies, I always find the nugget of humanity. And that's what the Superman movie has, is it has humanity.
Yeah.
You know, it's over the top, but the it's only very thing was, real and very, you know,
here's persuasive. The thing that bugs me a little bit about it. Lex Luthor living in the basement or living in the sewage. When we were in high school, they told us this whole story about it's all these themes. Like, Superman lives above the ground, and Lex Luthor lives below the ground because he's a monster. Right. And there was this whole backstory stuff. But it doesn't make a lot of sense why he's living in the sewers.
Right.
Does it?
Well,
where did he get his money? Where does he have books? There's a whole backstory.
I'm watching this, right? This is none of it makes Byrne sense. This is what stuff Byrne thought about. He's known because the cops are looking for him.
Lex Luthor. Yeah.
So he's a known quantity,
The criminal mind of our times, yeah.
So we don't know what happened before that movie. That's the way you look at it.
Well, he mentioned his father.
You don't know what happened before the movie. He could have been a public figure. Mm. That's where Byrne took the...
I always thought he was somehow, because why would he have Mitch Teschmacher?
Right, and Marv, you know, was in... I will give Marv this, is that Marv was the guy who wanted Luthor to be the evil businessman.
Oh, that was him? I thought it was Byrne.
Didn't like that much.
Oh, I thought John came up.
So Marv was more into the crime stuff, the idea of the crime boss and all that, but that everybody... And I think John went with that and did a lot with that that maybe Marv might not have done. But I always felt like that was a brilliant move because he's basically bad in
public. Yeah, he's like Wilson Fisk.
But nobody believes it.
Right. That was the whole Kingpin thing. They're like, that's the guy?
Right.
You know?
But I mean, the big Kingpin wasn't, he was secret.
Yeah, he was very secret. Yeah.
Luthor was out there because he was an egotist.
Right, and that's what drove him nuts about Superman, because he was taking his credit.
Right, so that's why I look at the movie and I go, okay, there's whole stories here that you could do Metropolis.
I want to see Otis the movie.
How did Otis get into his...
Oh, I always thought it was hysterical. Yeah.
Even but I mean, how did he get into that, into his...
Why would you employ that guy if you're...
To make yourself feel better. When you hang out in a group,
you got to be the smartest
one guy in your group who's like the guy Otis, that is there to make the rest of you look
good. Oh, that's true. It's just like, what the hell? He's got the hot girl. He's got whatever. He even says, why would I live above ground when I have all this below? Right. Look at this penthouse or what a Park Avenue address you have. She goes, it's in a sewer.
Right.
He does have everything, but he's just...
I could live that way.
I know.
Except I'd want to go for pizza.
Go out now then, exactly.
But it is funny. Like that would be when I was watching this. That's another story thing that came up. Is like,
how did he get there?
How did he get to that point where he's hiding underground? Clearly, there's I think an interesting story to that. And it could have been that he was.
And he was going to buy all that land and make it his own thing.
Had to have money to buy the land.
That's true.
Lex Luthor Incorporated. Because
he said somebody paid stupid money.
And it was Lex Luthor Incorporated.
Yeah.
So clearly he has some function.
So maybe he's hiding from the IRS.
And maybe what we're seeing is in the space of 3 months where he had to go underground.
Oh, there was time jumps in that movie. I've noticed it tonight. I was like wait, when did this happen?
He could only been hiding from everybody else. Maybe something happened before that.
Yeah.
But it could have been right before the movie starts, you know, or while Superman's away. So that's what Byrne, when we did the
And he
relaunch.
Knew enough about nuclear bombs and...
Well, he was brilliant.
Yeah. He's a criminal mind of our time.
So, you know, maybe it was a case where, okay, we all have to
maybe
go underground.
Maybe they just wrote it and
the other guys are like, hey, I'm not going
to... Maybe they just wrote it and didn't expect people to think about it as much as we are right
now. You don't.
But when you watch it now, after the 50th viewing, I started thinking about, like, and this doesn't make much sense, but then there's a guy flying. It's a fantasy.
Right. But it's still... has real emotion to it.
Yeah.
When the movie came out, Siskel and Ebert argued about it.
Oh, they did?
Yes.
They didn't like
Gene Siskel liked it.
Oh,
Roger was
kind of
like,
really?
Gene Siskel liked it, and he liked it because the emotions were real.
Right.
And the romance felt real.
And Ebert was more technical? Like, how come
the... He was the nerd. Like,
this doesn't make sense.
But Siskel was big on the fact that they had this...
Oh, I would never picture, because years ago, I used to watch them. Ebert always liked the sci-fi fantasy stuff, and Siskel hated it. He was more the pragmatic one, like, this is
stupid.
But
I just remember him arguing, going, no, because at the heart of the movie, it's a romance,
yeah,
and the romance is believable, and the characters sell it.
Oh.
And that was true. You know, that's still true. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That is, I mean, that's why, that's why I was sad tonight watching them when they're flying around. I go, oh, that's so sad, because they pull it off. You know,
the minute he meets her at the Daily Planet, you could see that. There's one scene where it almost looks creepy.
Yeah.
No, where he's sitting. It's a scene later in the movie when they go back and he's going to follow her out when she's going to take the
ladies to
interview.
Oh, to the helicopter?
Yeah, yeah, that whole thing.
Yeah.
There's a scene, a really quick shot of him sitting at his desk and he's staring at her.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I was like, oh, wow. He's
a
fixated.
Stalker. Yeah,
he's
fixated. Well, that ties into that Superman Returns movie where my cop friend says, oh, Superman's a deadbeat dad with a stalker. And, hey, I'm
not saying they're doing their karaoke. Yeah.
No.
Starts
all right.
At 7.
All right. Well, we got over an hour here on this. And we haven't even scratched the surface. This will be Superman Part 2. We'll come back next time in Ordway. We'll talk about why Superman 3 is actually a good movie.
I won't go that far.
No, what was the girl's name in that movie?
Annette O'Toole. Oh, no.
Oh, no, the blonde.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I know who you're talking. Right. And the guy, the bad guy was supposed to be Morgan Edge, and then they...
It was Robert Vaughn. Is that who that was supposed to be?
It was originally supposed to be Morgan Edge.
And why did they change it?
Because I don't think the Salkinds wanted to pay money.
Oh, it was a rights issue?
Yeah, because you'd have to... That pre-existed their first deal, so they probably would have had to pay something for
that
the
was supposed
use
to be
of
Morgan
that.
Morgan Edge?
That's what I'd read. It was originally pitched as Morgan Edge.
So somebody can explain how Superman 4
exists.
Because
he looks like he's actually, visually,
why,
he's a good
Morgan
Edge.
But why did Hashman come back for Superman 4?
Money.
Oh. Okay. Don't even...
Possibly,
money, money.
Possibly Christopher Reeve was...
begging him?
But here's the funny thing.
What?
Last week, I think it was, they announced that John Cryer is going to be playing.
Yeah, I saw that, and I said the same thing.
So dig this.
He played...
I met him at the Smithsonian Superman 50th, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We got to hang out with him.
Right.
And he was Lenny Luthor.
He was Lenny Luthor, yeah.
So, I mean, it's like, what a... You know, how cool
how
is
weird it all
to go
back
from, Lenny Luthor in 1987 to Lex Luthor in 19...
But that's going
to
be in the Supergirl movie?
I thought I got the impression it was in the series that they might be doing. Because they talked about doing a Superman series, but
the new one, the guy that's on there now.
I think it's gonna maybe debut. It's got to show up in Supergirl, is what I'm thinking.
I don't know where he's playing him.
Yeah, it's gonna
I was
be
wondering
in
that too. I was like,
because Supergirl got Lena Luthor or whatever.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So it
that's
makes sense that
sister,
they would introduce
though.
It. Yeah.
Whatever. All right, are we getting out of here?
Yeah, we should be.
Well, there you have it. The Power Cosmic Salute to Superman with Jerry Ordway and myself, Mitch Halleck, talking about the movie, the character, and all parts in between. I hope you enjoyed it, and God bless you if you stuck around for the hour and 40-something minutes of this super long Power Cosmic podcast. We'll be back next time talking about comic books, movies, and more. Maybe next week, maybe a week after, I don't know. Go to the comic book stores. Make sure you check out Nuclear Winter special from DC Comics. Checking out Jerry's art with Paul Dini. And again, check out DC Primal. And as always, come to Terrificon at Connecticut's Mohegan Sun every August to see myself, Jerry, and a million other fans just like yourself. Take care.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC, the folks that bring you the Terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.